Start into a new section of the book of Romans. Romans chapter 12. And I'd like to read the first two verses, which are kind of the threshold into this new section of the book of Romans. But we're going to focus this morning just on verse 1, which talks about the importance of us making a sensible sacrifice to the Lord. Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Well, this section that we're beginning this morning starts in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, and goes all the way through chapter 15, verse 13. And basically, what Paul is after in these chapters is the outworking of God's righteousness in the everyday life of the believer. He's been talking about our unrighteousness. He's been talking about God's gift of righteousness and justification. And now he's going to work out in more detail the practical outworking of righteousness and sanctification. So this is going to be the theme for the next several chapters. And basically, if you notice in verse 12, it begins with the word therefore. And most understand that what Paul is doing here is he's now building off of all that he's been teaching in the first 11 chapters of Romans. So therefore, based on chapters 1 through 11, therefore, based on that, this is what you need to do. So in effect, what he's saying is that the Christian duty that he's going to explore for several chapters with us is based on Christian doctrine. So God's truth, God's doctrines, God's theology, if you will, is the foundation for building one's practical life of obedience and sanctification. We need that foundation of truth to build upon a life which is pleasing to the Lord. This pattern of doctrine first and then spelling out our duty based on that doctrine, you find in a number of Paul's letters. One of the most well-known that follows this pattern is the book of Ephesians. The first three chapters are tremendous doctrine and theology, and then the last three chapters are working it all out. Now that you understand this truth, now how should you live it out? And that's what he's doing now in Romans. He's given us the truth of the gospel. Now he's going to start applying it as to how we actually can live it to the glory of God. So put in this light, we should connect chapter 12, verse 1, that's all with all that has preceded, but especially look at verse 36 of chapter 11. For from Him and through Him and to Him are all things. To Him be the glory forever. Amen. And another way to understand what Paul is launching in chapter 12, verse 1 as he has just said at the end of verse 36 of chapter 11, to God be the glory forever. Soli Deo Gloria, the glory of God alone. That should be the motto of every Christian. Now, how do you live that? How do you live for the glory of God alone? Well, chapter 12, verse 1 now begins to teach us how we're to do that. You know, this is so vital to the church today, because I think many within the church are not really living their lives to the glory of God. We may have made a decision at some point in our life for Christ, but there seems to be no genuine living for God on a daily basis. We're not really Christ-centered, or many are not really Christ-centered as they should be. They live very much like the world, and there's not much Christ-likeness actually in their life. Well, they have good intentions. Oh, if you ask them if they want to live for Christ, yeah, they do. But it seems like they're like a jet airplane that's on the runway, and it's taxied out in position, and it's now at the end of the runway, and it's revving up its engines, and it's checking all the instruments, and the tower gives them the go-ahead, and they're ready to take off, but they don't move forward. They're stuck there, revving their engines, wanting to take off, but it seems like they never actually start living for the glory of God or flying for Christ's sake. Some may even start to taxi down that runway and gain some speed, but somehow the transmission goes into neutral and then they start coasting and they never go airbound. Or some may even go airbound for a period of time, but then they're forced to make a quick landing. And so many within the church today are not really living for the glory of God like we should. And I think that's why the Apostle Paul is now presenting these practical truths to help us do that. Why is it ultimately that we don't live for God's glory? I think the bottom line issue why so many professing Christians are still on the runway is just our lack of commitment. There's just a lack of commitment to God. It's kind of like a marriage. Why there's so many divorces today. There's a lot of people that make a decision to marry someone, but they don't make a lifelong commitment to that person. I think there's a lot of people within the church that they've made a decision, quote, to become a Christian, but there's really just not much commitment to Jesus Christ. That's why these words are so important. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. True Christians should make a commitment to Christ. That's what Paul is going to tell us. He's going to say this is the only proper response in light of the mercies of God. And if you want to sum up the essence of what he's going to challenge us with, it's basically this, that all Christians should glorify God by giving themselves entirely to the Lord. That's the only reasonable response that we can make in light of his mercy. Well, what we're going to see in verse 1 and 2 is kind of the, like I said, the threshold that introduces us into this whole practical section of Romans, of living out the truth that he's been teaching so powerfully in the first 11 chapters. And once we get past these first two verses, then from verse 3 all the way through chapter 15, verse 13, he fleshes out these great principles and exhortations found in these first two opening verses. Well, let's begin by looking at this exhortation found in verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God. Notice the Apostle Paul says, I urge you. And the word to urge, it's not exactly the same as a commandment, but it's really kind of synonymous with a commandment. He's urging us. He's appealing to us. He's pleading. He's exhorting us. He's admonishing us. And it's the Apostle Paul that's doing that. This comes with apostolic authority. This is what the Spirit of God, through the Apostle Paul, as he's writing this letter, wants all of the Christians to do. This is our response to what God has done for us. So he says, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God. And this is a very important phrase, because the mercies of God provide two things. It provides, number one, the motivation for the sacrifice that he's asking us. Do it by the mercies of God. In other words, do it out of gratitude for God's mercy that He has shown you. Let God's mercy motivate you to present yourself as a sacrifice to God. And secondly, the mercies of God also become the enabling power behind the sacrifice. Because we can't really present ourselves to God as a living and holy sacrifice unless God's mercy continues to work in our heart and mind. So it's by the mercies of God. Now, what does he mean by the mercies of God? Well, if you've paid attention through chapter 9 and chapter 11, we've seen Paul talk a lot about the mercy of God in these two chapters, 9 and 11. For example, in chapter 9, verse 15, in talking about this incredible doctrine of election, Paul quotes from God speaking to Moses, and he says, "I will have mercy on whom I have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I have compassion." The mercies of God in the context deals a lot with God's sovereign mercy. The mercies of God is God sovereignly having mercy on some and even hardening others. We find in verse 16 of Romans 9, "So then it does not depend on the man who wills or the man who runs, but on God who has mercy." There's a sovereign electing element of God's mercy. He doesn't show mercy to all. Or you may look at verse 18 of Romans 9. "So then he has mercy on whom he desires, and he hardens whom he desires." Again, you see the sovereignty. And in verse 23, "He did so in order that he might make known the riches of his glory upon vessels of mercy which he prepared beforehand for glory." So the mercies of God must encompass in the context God's sovereign work of salvation in showing mercy to sinners who deserve judgment. In chapter 11, Paul has also talked about mercy. If you want to just sum it up, look at chapter 11 and look at verse 32. "For God has shut up all in disobedience so that he might show mercy to all," that is, all kinds of men, Jews and Gentiles. And the mercy here is God's goodness in light of our disobedience, in light of our sin, in light of our unworthiness, in light of the fact that we're called ungodly enemies and sinners back in Romans chapter 5. It's God's mercy and pity upon us who are so afflicted and diseased and even spiritually dead in our wretchedness and sin. That's God's mercy. God's grace normally looks at us in light of us guilty before the law of God. God's mercy looks upon us in our helpless, sick, diseased condition because of the influence of sin. And so what Paul is saying is, by the mercies of God, I want you to present yourselves as a sacrifice. By God's mercy. God's mercy has come to you, brethren. That's what he's saying. God's mercy has chosen you. God's mercy has saved you. When you deserve to go to hell, it's God's mercy that has adopted you as children into his family. The mercy of God. Remember that. Let it motivate you out of gratitude to offer yourself to God. And recognize that you need that mercy even today in order to do it. It's God's mercy. That's what we need. That's the basis for this whole exhortation to present ourselves as a sacrifice to God. So basically, God's mercy has transformed us into God's children. That means we've got to live a different life. We must live differently. We're God's children now. We're not what we used to be by the mercy of God. So based on the mercies of God, and notice the word is plural. There's an abundance of mercies. It's just not a single thing. It's ongoing. It's many. It's all kinds of mercies that we've received from God. This is the basis for the exhortation. Now he says, based on the mercies of God, present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. The word present here comes out of the sacrificial system as really this. So much of this whole verse comes right out of the Old Testament sacrificial system. You've noticed that, I'm sure, when we read it. The idea of presenting ourselves conjures up the Old Testament Israelite that would bring their offering and sacrifices to God. And they would present their animal to the priest to be slaughtered, to be offered up as a sacrifice to God. And what Paul is saying here is that I don't want you to come and present an animal to God. I just want you to come and present yourself to God. I want you to present yourself. That's the idea. This is captured so beautifully in Isaiah's words when the Lord called out for someone to do a duty, and Isaiah said, "Lord, here am I, send me." That's presenting yourself to God. "Lord, here am I. Lord, send me. Use me, Lord. Lord, here I am. I present myself to you." So we're to present ourselves to God. We're to present ourselves like a soldier reporting to his commanding officer, saying, "Reporting for duty, sir." Only here we're presenting ourselves, "Lord, I'm your sacrifice." Present yourselves to God. What he says we're to present is our bodies in verse 1. And the body here really represents the whole person, not just the physical flesh. Obviously, it involves everything. We're to present our body, yes, our physical body to God. You know, the Scriptures tell us that our body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. And Paul says that you are not your own in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19 and 20. "For you have been bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body." See, God has bought our body. Your body belongs to God. It doesn't belong to you anymore. You can't do with it just what you want to. But it's more than just your physical body. It involves your mind, your heart, your soul, your strength, your desires, your goals, your ambitions. All of that we're to present to God. We're to present our body, which basically, again, is to present the whole person to the Lord. And what are we supposed to present our bodies to? Well, it's be living in a holy sacrifice. The word sacrifice here also conjures up the Old Testament sacrificial system. And I think Paul primarily has the whole burnt offering in mind in Leviticus chapter 1. Remember the whole burnt offering? I think there's about 7 different offerings taught in Leviticus chapters 1 through 7. The very first one is the whole burnt offering. In Leviticus chapter 1, the whole burnt offering is called the whole burnt offering because the whole animal is sacrificed. That animal would be brought to the priest. The priest would slay the animal, usually by cutting its throat and bleeding it. And then in certain cases, they would skin the animal, but they'd put the whole thing on the fire, on the altar. They'd put everything, every bit of it. Now, in some of the other sacrifices, the priest would get a part of the animal to eat. Sometimes the worshiper would get a part of it. But in the whole burnt offering, the whole animal is given on the altar and burned up. And this is really an expression of the devotion of the worshiper who keeps back nothing for himself. When he brought a whole burnt offering, he's saying, "Lord, I'm yours entirely. Everything I am is yours." And I think that's the idea that Paul is teaching us here. Child of God, beloved brethren, by the mercies of God, present your bodies a sacrifice. And this is not to pay God back for our salvation. Don't misunderstand the nature of this sacrifice. It's not because, look what Christ has done, now you need to pay God back. We can never pay God back. Christ has offered a sacrifice that no one can reproduce. We can never be worthy of it. We can never pay God back. So it's not a pay God back. It's to give ourselves as a sacrifice out of the sheer gratitude for the free gift of salvation that we've received from Him. A sacrifice involves several things. It involves, number one, a total dedication of self. It's kind of an all or nothing kind of an idea. You know, sheep, when they were about ready to be sacrificed, couldn't come up to the worshiper and say, "Hey, Joe, I'll make you a deal. I'll give you wool for the next 5 years. And will you take that?" And of course, that's not a sacrifice. In other words, a sacrifice is you give it all. You don't just give part of it. You don't give the wool and the hoof. You give it all. That's a sacrifice. It involves a complete, total dedication. Christ challenged us with these words from time to time when He said to His disciples, "Look, you need to take up your cross." What does that involve? Sacrifice. It involves a complete sacrifice. He challenged us to deny ourselves. That's a sacrifice. Love Christ more than you love anybody else, even your family. That's a sacrifice. Maybe that's why when the Spanish explorer Hernando Cortez, when he landed at Veracruz, Mexico in the year 1519, was so intent on a conquest that to assure the complete and total dedication of his soldiers, he had all 11 of his ships burned in the water so that there was no turning back. And I think in a sense that's what the Apostle Paul is exhorting us to. Look, we should present ourselves to God as a sacrifice. All of you as a sacrifice. There's no turning back. Give yourself entirely to God. That's the nature of the exhortation. The sacrifice, therefore, involves this total dedication of self. It also implies a willingness to die. Because that's what sacrifices do. They die. All of them do. Reminds me of those marvelous martyrs in Revelation chapter 12, verse 11, who had to fight against the dragon, but they overcame the dragon. But listen to how they did it. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. And they did not love their life even to death. Because a sacrifice must be willing to die. Now, in our kind of sacrifice, we may not die. We may not be a martyr. But those who present themselves as a sacrifice to God must infer in that a willingness to die. I think this is where we struggle, isn't it? This kind of dedication is hard. And that's why we need the mercy of God to do it. Because our flesh does not want to make this kind of a commitment to Christ. You've probably heard the story about the pig and the chicken. They're walking down the road and they see a billboard. And the billboard is advertising a charity breakfast to raise money for the poor. And the chicken says to the pig, you know, I've got a wonderful idea. Let you and I make a contribution of ham and eggs to the charity breakfast. And we'll help out the poor. And the pig says, now wait a second, chicken. You hold your horses. That's not a very good idea. Because for you, that would just involve making a contribution. But for me, it would require a complete sacrifice. And I think as Christians sometimes, we're okay when we're playing the chicken. We're okay to give a few eggs because I'm here to live the next day. But to put ham on the table, well, I'm not so sure we want to do that. It's difficult. It's difficult. I think that's why many of us balk in this idea of being committed and dedicated to Jesus Christ. But that is the effect of what Paul is exhorting us to do. That's the nature of a sacrifice. You give it all. You don't just give part of it. Two adjectives describe the nature of this sacrifice. Actually, three. The first is living. It's to be a living sacrifice. And what does this mean? Well, it's the opposite of a dead one. In the Old Testament, you couldn't bring an animal that already died and say, well, this diseased animal kicked the bucket last night, so I know what I'll do. I'll drag his carcass to the temple and I'll offer it to God. You couldn't do that in the Old Testament. That was an unworthy sacrifice to bring anything that was dead. No, it had to cost you something. You had to take a living animal that was worth something and sacrifice it. So to be a living sacrifice basically means that we're to present ourselves as alive to God. A living sacrifice. And the nuances could be several. It could mean that as a living sacrifice is to be ongoing. We're to be alive in this offering of sacrifice to God. It's to be ongoing. We're to be living in the sense that offering of ourselves is not to die. It's not to be short term. It's to be ongoing. It's to be a living sacrifice. And maybe also it carries the idea that we saw back in Romans 6. that when making this, when presenting ourselves as a sacrifice to God, we're to do it as being dead to sin but alive to God. That we're to do it being spiritually alive, because really only those people can do this anyway. The next thing is it's supposed to be holy. Don't present yourself to God living in stubborn, unrepentant sin. That's not the kind of sacrifice He wants. You know, the animals that were presented for a sacrifice in the Old Testament had to be without spot or blemish. And the significance of that is that that was to be a symbol or a picture of ultimately the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Well, this idea is presented even with us. And this is where part of the struggle comes in, because we still wrestle with our sin. We're never completely able to be holy. It's always a battle. But it's the nature of the challenge that Paul is putting before us. Holy means holy in character. It means striving to be righteous by the power of God. It also means to recognize that you're holy in the sense that you're set apart for God. You've been bought with a price. God owns you. You're holy. You've been set apart for God's glory. That's what holy means also. So we're to present ourselves a living and a holy sacrifice, and thirdly, acceptable to God. See, the sacrifices, when they were offered up in smoke, produced when they were offered up in fire, produced this smoke. And throughout the early chapters of Leviticus, when that smoke would rise up, the Scriptures say it would become a soothing aroma in the nostrils of God. He would delight in that. He would rejoice in that. Because something about the nature of someone giving something as a sacrifice to Him was something He rejoiced in. It was well-pleasing to Him. It was acceptable to Him. And the idea here is that as we present ourselves to God as a living and a holy sacrifice, God is pleased with that. And let me say at this point that God ordains that there are things in our life that we will have to sacrifice, sometimes willingly, sometimes more unwillingly. But there will be a cause for sacrifice in our walk with God. It's just a part of the nature of the Christian life. You will at times be called upon by God to sacrifice. But I want you to know that whenever you are called upon to do that, and you do it in a way that's honoring to God, that it is well-pleasing to God. Now, we may say, why? Why is it well-pleasing when I have to suffer or when I have to sacrifice for Your glory, Lord? Why is it well-pleasing to You? You want to know why? Because that's what His Son did. That's what Christ did. When He calls upon us to walk in a similar way, where we offer ourselves as a sacrifice to God, He sees Christ in us. We become more like Jesus Christ. He sees the stamp of His Son in us. And that's always well-pleasing to the Father, whenever He sees Christ. And those kinds of sacrifices that sometimes you and I will be called upon to make are the very things that make us more like Christ. And that's very well pleasing to them. Well, let's look quickly at the explanation. Why is Paul exhorting us by the mercies of God in light of all of this that he's taught in chapters 1 through 11 to present ourselves entirely, our bodies, our soul, our mind, as a living, holy sacrifice acceptable to God? He goes on to say, it's your spiritual service of worship. Now, the King James has reasonable, and there's a big debate in the commentaries, which word is better? Is it reasonable or is it spiritual? And I'm not sure I know which one is best. I think probably we should mingle the two ideas together. But here's the idea. When we present our bodies as a living and a holy and a pleasing sacrifice to God, this is eminently a spiritual and reasonable act of worship to God. In other words, in light of the mercies of God, all that God has done for you, all that God has done in His mercy to choose you and to sacrifice His Son to save you and justify you and give you glory as your inheritance and adopt you into His family, in light of all of the mercy that we have received from God, it is reasonable to offer ourselves as a sacrifice back to God. It's your spiritual worship. And not only is it spiritual, it is reasonable. In other words, dedicating ourselves to God is the only proper, logical, and spiritual response to the mercy of God. Failure to dedicate ourselves entirely to God is the height of folly and irrationality. That's what he's saying. And this is our reasonable worship, or our spiritual worship. And notice the worship here isn't just restricted to Sunday morning. This is worship as a lifestyle. This is worship as a day in and day out. This is your reasonable and spiritual worship of God. The way you live for the glory of God. The way you live soli Deo Gloria is to give yourselves, present yourselves to God as a living and a holy and acceptable sacrifice. That's the only thing that makes sense in light of the depth of His sacrifice and mercy that He's made for us. Nothing else makes sense but a complete dedication to the glory of God. Turn back, if you will, to Daniel 3. I want to show you an example of this. Daniel chapter 3. Daniel is right after the book of Ezekiel. So if you find Ezekiel, keep moving to the right and come to Daniel chapter 3. In the third chapter of Daniel, we have the chapter opens up with King Nebuchadnezzar, who makes an image of gold 90 feet tall. And he orders all of his governing rulers and officials throughout the land to come to the dedication service. And so they all gather, and he tells them that when the music starts to play, the music from the horns and the flutes and the bagpipes and all those instruments, whenever those things start to play, everybody is to fall down and worship the golden image. And if you don't, your penalty would be that we will immediately cast your body into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. In other words, you're going to be toast if you don't do this. And more accurately, burnt toast, if you don't fall down and worship this image. Well, in comes these Babylonians that don't like these Jews who aren't doing this, who aren't bowing down. So some Babylonians came in and brought charges against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And in verse 12 of Daniel chapter 3, they approach Nebuchadnezzar and they point out that there are these Jews in your kingdom that do not serve your gods and they do not worship the golden image which you have set up. And in verse 13 it says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar in rage and anger gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, 'Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipes, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, and what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?'" How would you have responded in a similar situation? I mean, what you're giving up here is not you're just going to lose your friend, a friend, or lose your job. You're going to lose your life. And that by being burned by fire. I mean, that's what's at stake here, is you're going to lose it all. You're going to die. And in verse 16 through 18, we hear their response. And it's quite incredible. Shadrach Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of burning fire, and He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if He does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Well, you know the story. They grabbed those three Jewish young men and they heated up that furnace seven times hotter than it was. And they tied up those young men and the soldiers that were carrying them, threw them into the fire, and the fire was so hot it even consumed the men that were carrying the three Hebrew young men. They died. And yet in the midst of the fire, Nebuchadnezzar rubs his eyes and he can't believe what he's seeing, because there in the midst, he says, were there not three men thrown in there? But I see four men, and one of them is like the Son of God. And of course, most understand that to be the very presence of Jesus Christ at their side. And so Nebuchadnezzar calls them out of the fire and they examine the men. Their flesh isn't even singed. Their garments are not burned at all. There's not even the smell of smoke on their clothes. And Nebuchadnezzar says in verse 28, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and delivered His servants who put their trust in Him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their God. That's Romans 12:1. They yielded up their bodies as a living and a holy and acceptable sacrifice to God, willing to die for their worship of God. What an incredible example. What boldness. And what a glorious response in God miraculously delivering them. And not all of God's saints that make that sacrifice get delivered this way. We know. The Apostle Paul is an example. You know, he was stoned. Five times he received the Jewish 39 lashes. Three times he was beaten with rods. He was beaten times without number. He suffered tremendously. But all for the glory of God. And God blessed him and enriched him. When we look at the nature of the sacrifice of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I must say honestly that I doubt any of us will be called upon to make this kind of a sacrifice. And probably most of us are going, glad to hear that. But nevertheless, we're still called upon to live as a sacrifice. But our sacrifice will be lived out more in the mundane issues of life. By and large, that's how it's going to be. It's going to be offering ourselves as a living and a holy and acceptable sacrifice to God in the little things of life. I doubt any of us will be blessed with the privilege and the high calling of actually dying for Jesus Christ. Maybe some of us will. But probably most of us will need to live this out just in the day in and day out struggles and challenges and mundane issues of life. We may not all be like Eric Little, who had the eye of the world upon him as he refused to run in the Olympics on the Lord's Day out of his own personal conviction that that would be to violate the Sabbath. He was willing to sacrifice a gold medal for the glory of God. And that sacrifice he made willingly. And most of us, our sacrifices will not be on that level. So how then do we live as a sacrifice to God? If we're not probably going to make great, glorious, world-affecting sacrifices like these. Well, we can start every day when we get up. And we can say to the Lord, today, Lord, I give You myself. I give You my all, Lord. All that I am, I'm at Your disposal today. You have chosen to save me from my great sin through the blood of Jesus Christ. You have chosen not to punish me as I deserve. You've called me as Your child. I can never lose Your love. You have eternal glory waiting for me. Lord, today I give You my all. I belong to you, Lord Jesus. I present myself to you today. And you may live for the next 24 hours doing nothing but changing dirty diapers and washing dishes and trying to put fires out at work. But you present yourself to God. In light of the mercies that you have received, you present yourself to God. Lord, use me. Use me today. I belong to you. You've done so much for me. I give you, I present myself to you. We live as a sacrifice to God when we're in the middle of making a tough decision. We say, Lord, not my will, but thy will be done. You live as a sacrifice when you do that. You live as a sacrifice to God when you desire to please Christ and not yourself. We live as a sacrifice to God when we're willing to die to self and say no to me so that I can serve and be a blessing to somebody else. We live as a sacrifice to God when we make this sacrifice, though small it may be, joyfully out of gratitude, always with an eye to the mercy of God that has wrought such incredible wonders for us. We may not die as a martyr in a pagan land, but you can die for Christ each day by loving and serving your family, by being a blessing to those who are under your charge, by sharing Christ with those who do not know the Lord, by living as a godly witness and desiring to give Him the glory for whatever happens in our life. Chrysostom, one of the early church fathers, said, "How is the body to become a sacrifice to God? Let the eye look on no evil thing, and it has become a sacrifice. Let your tongue speak nothing filthy, and it has become an offering. Let your hand do no lawless deed, and it has become a whole burnt offering." The end result of all of this is that if we fail to present ourselves daily, and really it comes down to a daily thing, it's not present yourself to God once and then that's it. No, because sin is always struggling with us. And you see, the problem with presenting ourselves as a living sacrifice is that the sacrifice keeps wanting to crawl off the altar. We may wake up in the morning and present ourselves to God as a sacrifice and lay ourselves on the altar, and by noontime, I'm miles down the road doing something else. You know, I've forgotten all about it. That's the problem with the living sacrifice. It knows how to crawl, and it can get away. And it can shirk and forget and go back on the devotion and the commitment that we've made to Christ. So it has to be ongoing. But I think the reason that if we do not do that, if we do not do that and continue to live our life for me and for my goals ultimately and for my glory and my happiness, and if that's what's motivating us, we will be miserable as Christians. You will never know the glory and the peace and the joy of what it means of being dedicated to Christ. And all of us struggle with that. None of us are presenting ourselves as sacrifices as we should. I sense in my own life many times when I fail so miserably in this, and I need to again present myself to God so many times, even in the course of one day. But if we don't do that, then we never get off the runway. We never get airborne. We lose our opportunities to glorify God by our witness if we're not giving ourselves as a sacrifice to God. And if we're always indulging ourselves and living my life the way I want to do it and doing what I want to do and pursuing my pleasures in life, then ultimately we become an idol that we sacrifice ourselves to instead of the true God of heaven. We become the idol. We become the one to whom we present ourselves as a living and usually an unholy sacrifice. It's for me. And that's totally irrational for a Christian to do that. And whatever we do not present to God as a sacrifice, we leave a gaping loophole for the devil to come in and have access into our life. That's why we need to present all of ourselves to God. Close up every loophole. Give it all to God, Lord. It's all. If I have to sacrifice, Lord, in light of Your mercies, that's what I ought to do. That's what I want to do. And those who by God's mercy and grace are able to present themselves as living in a holy and a well-pleasing sacrifice to God, they will glorify the Lord by their life. Far more than the others, they will glorify God. Even in the nature of what they have to give up and what they have to lose, they will glorify God by those losses and by those sacrifices. And those who present themselves to God as a sacrifice will enjoy the spiritual benefits of a greater, more powerful unction of the Spirit of God, more of the fruit of God. They will taste more deeply the riches of God's mercy and grace for those who present themselves to the Lord. And finally, they will be more useful to the Master. I love that verse in 2 Timothy 2 where Paul is exhorting Timothy to cleanse himself from various sins. And here's the reason why. So that you will be a vessel for honor, sanctified, useful to the Master, prepared for every good work. Beloved, those of us who by God's mercy present ourselves to God will be more useful for the Master than those who do not. And that should be where our heart is. In conclusion, why is it that so many Christians seemingly do not live for the glory of God, but are so caught up in the things of the world and the things of this life, and so caught up in themselves? Well, I think the bottom line is that our commitment is just too low. When was the last time that you presented yourself as a living and a holy and an acceptable sacrifice to God? Some of you may have done that this morning. Bless you. For some of us, it may have been a day or two since we've done that. Or maybe a week. Maybe months. With some, it might have even have been years. To present ourselves to God, beloved, though, is our only spiritual and reasonable response in light of God's great mercy. It's the way to bring God glory. It's the first way to live out all of the truth of God's grace and justification and adoption that we have received and been taught in the first 11 chapters of Romans. And what kind of a Christian presents themselves to God daily as a sacrifice to God? It's those who are freshly reminded of the depth of their sin and the magnitude of God's mercy. That's what will motivate you to do it. Is it easy? No. Is it painful? Yes. Is it costly? Definitely. But Christ sacrificed His all for us. And Paul says to us, that's your only reasonable and spiritual response to Christ. Present yourselves, beloved, by the mercy of God, in light of our weakness and our proneness to strive, present ourselves to God as a living, holy sacrifice to God. It's well-pleasing to the Lord. And it's our only spiritual and reasonable thing to do in light of all that Christ has done for us. May God help us.